Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
All right, let's call this the Tuesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and with me today, hey, Dan the Man is here. Woo! All right, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three E's.
So, and all right, since we were Danless yesterday, we get to roll out our movie review from good old Dan's Drive-In. Now, you know, he got to watch Remember the Titans over the weekend. So what did you think of this one?
I actually thought this was a really good movie. I didn't really realize, as I watched a lot of movies about, you know, the South and racism as a kid, you don't really realize the impact that it truly has as you kind of get older. So, you know, I like the fact that, you know, the training style for this coach, Denzel Washington, and I did remember the last movie I seen him in was with John Goodman. He was a detective. I don't know if you remember that one, but, you know, starts off with, I'll tell you a story about the time I almost died, and it's not Denzel talking, it's the character, the ghost or whatever. So I did remember that, but I don't remember the name of it. But, you know, I got into this one. It picked up pretty quickly. You know, the interesting thing I found out most about it is a lot of it just, well, the racism part, you know, I can understand that and how real that was back then. But the parts that just were not, absolutely were not believable to me, Big Jack, were the fact that, and, you know, maybe you can help me understand this, was, you know, these high school football head coaches are essentially treated like, you know, today's Bill Belichick's. You know, so that part I didn't buy, the way they treat all these head coaches like they're, you know, on this whole other level plane, almost like $1 million a year coaches. So I couldn't buy into that part of it. When they went to state, I don't remember if it was when they won or before they won, and the coach goes outside, Denzel goes outside, and all of his neighbors step outside and start clapping for him. I mean, it's just, that to me seems totally Hollywood. You know, if the head coach for the local high school that is not too far from me lived on my block after they won state this year, I don't think myself or any of my neighbors would be outside, you know, waiting for him to come outside to give him a round of applause. I didn't buy that. And the one thing that was almost on the verge of irritating was the original coach's daughter and her involvement into the sports, you know, into being so involved with football. It actually was getting to the point where it was obnoxiously annoying. You know, it was such a Disney type thing to add in that lovable, annoying character. So, I mean, if you took her out and took out the scene where they're all, the neighbors are clapping for him, I think it's a pretty great movie, actually. And I liked how they all came about. And I did like how in the end, you know, you find out 10 years later that these people kind of all stuck together despite their differences. Oh, and the last part I really bothered me was when the young man who was teamed up with, you know, the young white guy who was teamed up with the black guy, and they were the two polar ends, you know, as far as hating each other's race and, you know, one guy being for the team, the other one being for himself. You know, the white guy's former girlfriend walks onto the field up to the black guy and says, "Well, now I've met you," and shakes his hand. I mean, you know, I'll be honest, again, you know, I thought it was a really great movie, but this is why I don't watch these types of movies, because, I mean, I get it, Hollywood is fantasy, but you're just going over the top, and maybe I'm too much of a cynic or a realist, but half of this crap doesn't happen in real life.
Oh, there we go. I think we're still on the air.
I'm back. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what was the last thing you heard?
You were just wrapping up how you liked the movie, but there was just those kind of things that bothered you.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, all in all, I think it's a really good movie if you haven't seen it. I think it was a 2004 movie that starred Denzel Washington and a lot of faces you might find familiar, like the young man from Clueless. He was the boyfriend to the blonde girl's best friend, Dion's boyfriend. I don't remember his name, but I recognized him off the bat. So it seemed like an older movie because that guy's a lot older now. But I mean, all in all, it was a great movie. I highly recommend it. I give my thumbs up or my drive-in approval. We'll have to find something that works with a drive in Tennessee. But yeah, I mean, do you kind of have the IMDb synopsis for this movie?
I can, you know, I'm sure I can get it here really, really quickly. You know, kind of.
Oh, I thought you'd have it up
already. Yeah. No, I was looking for something else. I've been trying to find something, and I was just kind of sidetracked looking for it. And then, you know, when we disappeared there, I wasn't quite sure if we were actually going to stay on the air. And to tell you the truth, I actually don't know if we're talking to anybody but each other right now. So we'll see how that goes. But.
But yeah, I mean, all in all, if you've got Disney Plus, I highly recommend you jumping on it, making it a movie night maybe this weekend. A really good movie, you know, because then you can start to prepare for the XFL.
There you go. Oh, it actually came out in 2000.
Oh,
so.
But I was off by 4 years.
Yeah. Here's the.
No, go ahead.
The synopsis is very short. It's all of a line and a half. It's the true story of a newly appointed African-American coach and his high school team on their first season as a racially integrated unit. That's the synopsis on IMDb.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure the real-life story wouldn't have been as exciting the way things happened. But as far as the natural progression of the movie, it moved pretty quickly. It didn't leave you, like, draining for some action or something to happen. It's just some of the things were just outright ridiculous. You know, like I said, the little girl and her overly loved football, but just the way she was portrayed, I just don't see any human, whether a little boy or a little girl, acting in that matter. So it, you know, it was the prototypical Disney side chick. You know, I mean,
yeah,
they've got their formula. So that, you know, I would have edited out if I was a producer. You know, if I were a billionaire, I would just start buying movies and editing them the way I would like them, so people can see how they're actually good movies. And then, you know, like I said, that scene where the girl walks down the field says, "I've never met you." And then all of a sudden she shakes her hand, and now we've met.
That was a little over the top, you know, because you're not just going to be able to walk right onto a field.
Exactly.
One of those things. But, yeah, it is based on a true story. The high school it's based on is actually T.C. Williams High School. So...
Yeah, I mean, when you watch it, is that surprising to you, the way they treated these head coaches? I mean, it's high school football.
You know, in some areas, you know, football, you know, it's God than football. You know, now I don't know if Virginia is one of these areas because that's where it's from, but, you know, I know, like, in Texas, you know, it's like that, where, you know, high school coaches are as revered as college or pro coaches are, or in some cases even more if you're good. So, you know, there are some areas, you know, obviously we don't live in one because, I can't even remember who the hell my high school coach was at this point in time. But, you know, it's just – so, you know, it is possible. I don't really see – the neighbors coming out to applaud. You know, I think that was more a symbol of, you know, they were accepting the black man into their community, or maybe I should say African-American man into the community, just to be politically correct. You know, I think it was just more a movie symbol of that than something that actually really happened. But, you know, because you got to remember, I mean, before that he was Coach Kuhn and they were throwing bricks through his window.
Yeah.
So, you know, it made a, you know, winning football made it a quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think if you haven't seen it, you should to go out and see it. I did find, I love the fact, though, that his attitude, and I hope this is true to story, the way he coached had nothing to do with race, more so in football. And I found some similarities in the way, like, you know, you trained us as wrestlers where you basically beat it out of us until we were just broken down, and then you just had to do what you're supposed to do and not think about it. So it's kind of interesting how you can find, you know, in sports world, what kind of defines success, and that's following the plays, you know, not really thinking on your own. And I know that's a horrible thing to say, I think, for a lot of millennials, and that's not accepting, but when you follow a process, you can kind of succeed. You just break down everything you know and forget about it. You can move forward and fight and win. And I think that's what it was all about, you know, on the field and off the field.
And it is a PG movie, so it is friendly to a, you know, a certain age of children. So if you, you know, you're worried about that, it, you know, it definitely is PG. So, you know, and it made just over 105 million worldwide. So it was a hit.
Wow. Yeah, I can definitely see why. I'm sure when it came out, the fact that it was, you know, it had the Disney name on it, I just kind of, yeah, okay, great. I'll see it when I see it. But, you know, one of the things I kind of sticking with football, I'm sure you talked about the Chiefs' big win on Sunday, so I don't think we, you know, what's the point of diving into that? I don't know if you touched on this at all, but just kind of goes along with the situation somewhat, but not really, is the fact that, you know, we've talked about Antonio Brown for the last year going from the helmet problem. His exit is trying to leave Pittsburgh, the helmet problem, to the rape, to the assault, to the burglary. And I just found it very interesting because you touched on this a million times, and maybe not so outright, but you kind of alluded to it. And the fact that Roger Goodell and the NFL are actually concerned for his mental well-being. Now, did that kind of come out as a surprise to you? Because it surprised me a little bit.
What, that he went bonkers?
No, that the NFL is actually making it a priority to, but maybe not so much sweep things out of the rug, because you know, obviously that's blown up in Goodell's face before, but trying to figure out what's going on with him and, you know, trying to help his mental status.
Yeah, well, you know, I got it. I didn't know the best way to put it. Sadly, it looks like they were correct, isn't it? I mean, he, you know, I didn't look too deeply into what happened, but I know he had some kind of meltdown where the police were called. So, I, you know, obviously, or unfortunately, I guess we should say, it seems like they were right, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's not what I'm trying to get to. I'm just trying to get your opinion on, are you surprised that the NFL is actually going that route?
Yeah, was I surprised they were right about something? I'm kind of in the middle of it. I mean, I don't honestly think, you know, like, I know there's a lot of people, oh, well, you know, they don't care about their players and blah, blah, blah. I don't think they don't care about their players. I buy that at all. You know, but it's difficult when you have so many players, past, present, all that kind of stuff, to be fully invested in them all the time. So, you know, it's difficult. I mean, it's akin to having, you know, a boatload of friends. You can't talk to them all every day, regardless of if you want to or not. So, you know, I mean, I think they do the best they can with what they have. You know, I believe they've taken a more vested interest since their negatives do pop up on the news constantly. Unlike any other sport, you know, if you're in the NFL and you make a mistake, it will be on the news every day for as long as they can find a way to get it into the news. So, I think they're doing a job, and I am kind of surprised they had that depth of an interest in him, but I guess you wonder if maybe they saw something. So, you know, because, I mean, you got to question a guy who doesn't want to play over a helmet when it wasn't a big deal for everybody else. You know, I guess you wonder, right?
Yeah. So it just, you know, when you see the perpetual downfall over the last year, I don't know. It just, it was a different take when I saw the report that they we're actually concerned about his mental well-being, as opposed to, immediately jumping on and, well, if he plays again, he's suspended for this many games. You know, it seemed like over the last couple of years, they're just so quick to throw out punishment as opposed to maybe looking into the situation a little bit more and being, influenced by, the media and the press and the fans. So, I don't know. I just wanted to get your take on it. It does make sense, like you said, with all the players they have. It is hard to be completely vested in it, but, where do you go from there? Is that what the union's for? Is that what the teams are for? It is interesting, though, to know that there's so many avenues that you go through with mental health and then the causes. Is it, the constant banging, especially now that African doctor has kind of been disproved. So, and then, it's just one of those things, even the Aaron Hernandez situation. I'm sure maybe you've heard about all the specials going on about him, but even that, to come out afterwards and find out that after they analyzed his brain, he was probably one of the worst cases. Can you compare him against Chris Benoit? So, just, I guess, crazy time for the NFL, but speaking of crazy things, I don't know if you caught this one, Big Jack. Two guys from my hometown of New Lenox, Illinois, were indicted. Here we go. They were indicted or getting federal charges because they were indicted in federal court for alleged scheme to sell tax tickets. So, James Costello and William O'Neill were generating fake complimentary and discount tickets without the team's authorization, and then gave them to Bruce Lee, who owned Great Tickets and was selling them, for whatever, below face value, and sold roughly 35,000 tickets, netting almost $900,000, resulting in a White Sox loss of $1 million. Now, I just thought this was so interesting. I saw the story break, I think last week or something, and it kind of laughed at me because, who's going out there and buying these tickets? They must have been pretty solid seats. Because, you could just go to the White Sox game and show up and get any ticket you want, essentially pick where you want, except with the exception of behind home plate. So did you see anything about that? And, what are your thoughts on that?
No, this is actually the first I had heard of it. But I did see the article. Apparently, this first popped up in, 2018.
Yeah, I didn't hear about it back then, but, it's been going on. They were selling tickets for, 2016 through 2019.
So, yeah, the way it says here is in 2018 – it says, for example, he sold at least 11,000 White Sox tickets on the StubHub site. That was 10,871 more than his closest competitor. So, that kind of red flagged it back then is, what brought it to all the attention there. So...
I don't know. It just kind of cracked me up. Like I said, you can show up and, get pretty decent seats just by walking up the gate. It made me immediately think, though, a couple years ago, my father-in-law was in town, and my wife's nephew who lived in Nashville was up here, and we ended up going to the Sox-Angels game, and we were quoted that the three tickets would be, you know, roughly $17 a piece tax. And, you know, I drove my father-in-law. I was like, no, I'll pay for it. When the guy rang the total for the three tickets, it was $33. So I don't think you need to do the math in your head that quickly to realize that when you're told $17 plus tax ticket times three, that does not equal $34. So it just made me think back to that situation. Wonder if we were, you know, in line with Bill or James or whatever. So, you know, it's just pretty interesting. And, you know, what I guess what I wanted to ask you, though, with the fact that Jerry Reinsdorf's deal with owning the stadium or however the whole scheme that he put together works, you know, if they don't draw certain amount of million people per year, they don't have to pay the lease on the stadium. It's, you know, they're not paying for it. So do you think that in any, you know, like you said, 10,000 tickets, I don't know if that's going to, you know, push them towards that mark, but do you think that could be one of the reasons maybe they were found out? They were definitely pushing too many tickets over a three-year span. To really, you know, kind of ruffle the feathers of the, Monopoly owner, essentially. He kind of really reminds me of.
Yeah, you know, generally in situations like that, this is how these people get caught. You know, because if you think about it, I mean, if you're selling 10,000 more tickets than the next closest person, that's going to draw a big red flag. So, you know, just kind of one of those things where it's like, hey, guess what? What's going on here? So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of mad. I didn't find anything.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like you were saying, you could walk up and get tickets, but if this guy was selling them cheap enough, you know, I'm sure people out there looking to save money.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's just a kind of funny story close to home for me. I thought it was really interesting.
But well, you know, while you're talking about stuff that's interesting, today, Dan, is the day they release the Hall of Fame ballots. So you know who voted for whom. Well, the BBWAA, the Baseball Writers of America Association, decided that they would release all but one ballot, Dan. You know what ballot they did not release?
The guy who didn't vote for Jeter?
You got it. The ballot that didn't contain Derek Jeter's name. Now, you know, in a way, I can see this being a good thing. But obviously, you know, I'm sure there's some idiot on there right now figuring out who the voters are and whose ballot didn't come up here. So, you know, eventually they're going to figure this out. Where do you, you know, because basically they're just protecting this person because, you know, they're going to get an onslaught of misery for not voting for Derek Jeter. Do you... Are you okay with this? Where do you stand here?
I think when you have the voice of the Yankees calling this guy out prior to the release, I think this is the best stance available. This doesn't only affect putting too much undue pressure on the guy or media attention. This I mean, we don't know how crazy some of these fanatics can be. And you've got to imagine if his name was released, the amount of death threats you would get. You know,
yeah.
Like you said, there's someone who's going to be able to figure it out. Do you think we'll know by Friday?
Well, it does look like here they say there's 397 voters, but they only list 315 ballots. So if they do figure it out, it may take a little longer. So, you know, we'll have to see how that works out or how they kind of figure out who voted or who didn't vote. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to take very long till, you know, either the person just comes out and says, hey, look, it was me, shut up, or if somebody actually does get down to it and, you know, finally go, okay, well, it was this guy. So, yeah, I figure, you know, we'll be stuck with that here real soon.
And kind of going along with that, with the interesting position Jeter is in down in South Florida, is it worth anything for him to come out and put out a statement on not to kill this guy or, you know, ruin his life because you're not happy? You know, not, I don't want to say that Derek Jeter needs to come out defensive, but kind of put out some kind of statement, or would he just kind of get some backlash and people still wondering what he's doing down there?
You know, I don't think it would hurt, you know, if he came out and said something, or if somebody besides you or I came out and said something, because, I mean, I don't give a damn that he didn't vote for Derek Jeter. You know, it doesn't bother me at all. I mean, he's got the vote. Let him do with it what he wants. You know, that unless baseball is going to start putting rules on it, that's what these guys are allowed to do. You know, and again, I'll completely defend the fact that, you know, you can't tell me that Derek Jeter is better than guys like Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and, you know, Babe Ruth, or, you know, the guys you could go back and look at who are in the Hall of Fame and weren't unanimous. So why does Jeter deserve it? Because he's a Yankee? Is that what these people are telling me, Dan? Because he plays in New York and he was a longtime Yankee, that he deserved to be a unanimous selection? I can't buy that at all. You know, because Michael Kay says he's a unanimous selection, I'm supposed to jump up and down and go, oh, yeah, Michael Kay's right. He knows what he's talking about. You know, I mean, that's why for the longest time they didn't release these ballots. You know, it was kind of kept secret. So, I don't get the, you know, maybe just because it's one vote. I mean, if it would have been a couple votes, maybe it wouldn't have been such a big deal. But the fact that it's one vote has everybody up in arms. But I do think if he came out and said something, it would help. You know, but there's still going to be someone who goes out and finds out where this guy lives or whatever, and, you know, posts his address on the internet like these asshats have a tendency to do. So, but I, you know, again, that's just me. I don't know how, you know, how everybody else takes it, or, you know, however it works out. I mean, I do like the ballot I'm looking at here. It's Bonds, Clemens, Jeter, and Manny Ramirez. So you got three guys who cheated and Jeter. That's a fantastic ballot.
Yeah.
So, You know, and I mean, there were a couple guys who just exclusively voted for Jeter, and that was it. They didn't think anybody else was deserving. And again, that's, you know, that's their prerogative. You know, I know somewhere down the line here, and I haven't seen it yet, but J.J. Putz got a Hall of Fame vote.
You know, and growing up as a kid, you know, not knowing how any of this stuff works, you know, the Hall of Fame was something I definitely wanted to do. I wanted to go to New York, you know, go stare at exhibits and walk around and see what is, you know, essentially the Hall of Fame, you know, to actually see stuff and, you know, especially back in the 80s, 90s, you know, we were still working with encyclopedias. And then just seeing, you know, the old footage during rain delays, you know, to me it would have been such a thing to go back and, you know, see the stuff from Babe Ruth. I'm sure we got that stuff from Connie Mack in his suit when he was with the Athletics. I forget if he started with Philly, KC, or was in Oakland. I don't remember that whole lineage, but, you know, kind of going back and seeing all that. But as a grown-ass man today and seeing how the system works, I mean, what reason would I – how can you sell me on getting me to spend the money to go to the Hall of Fame knowing that there's no requirement other than you had a really good career and you were great to the media that votes for you?
Yeah.
Why would I go?
Yeah, well, this is another one of those, I guess we'll call it, interesting situations here. According to the list, the writer who voted for J.J. Putz is a fellow by the name of Steve Kornacki. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Apparently, his latest article, Dan, was on the Iowa caucus. So from what it looks like here, and I just looked at his Wikipedia page because it was easiest, it doesn't even look like he's reported on baseball in quite a while. But yet he's got a Hall of Fame vote. So, you know, maybe, again, maybe, and I think you brought this up a couple of years ago, maybe that should be the question more than anything, is we've got to look at what these guys' criteria is for voting. You know, and I mean, there's, you know, there's nothing particularly wrong with his ballot. It's Jeter, Jones, Pettit, Putz, Schilling, Sheffield, and Walker. I would just kind of like to know what made him think J.J. Putz was a Hall of Famer. You know, not saying he shouldn't have voted for him. I'd just kind of like to know what made him think to cast that vote. So.
Well, and not only that, I mean, if you're going to be voting for them, why aren't you covering them?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I guess I could see, you know, maybe they thought this was a better opportunity, or, you know, if that was just your entry-level job and you were looking to move up. But, you know, I mean, I would be, you know, curious, does he still watch the game? You know, does he still know what's going on in baseball? You know, those kind of things. And not just him. I mean, I would question all of these guys. You know, what is their involvement now? You know, is there a way to kind of look at what goes on, you know, or what you do, you know, kind of stuff like that. So, I don't know if there is, but, you know, again, it just makes me wonder. I mean, again, I'm not saying you shouldn't vote for him. If you truly believe that this guy's a Hall of Famer, put him on your ballot. I'm cool with that, but just let me ask you why. You know, what made you think that? You know, because, I mean, I've come on here with you, and, you know, you and I have talked about it. I believe Gary Sheffield is the Hall of Fame. Obviously, I'm in the minority because he's still on the ballot. So, you know, I mean, there might be questions, you know, people questioning why I think that. I saw him play, and I know, you know, his numbers are close. I just believe, you know, he was a Hall of Famer. So, but, you know, we'll see. We'll have to keep a look on it and see if this guy's name ends up coming out. But I did want to ask you if you came across this, Dan. The USA Today, I believe this was, they put out the first set of predictions for the 2020 Major League Baseball season. They had a panel of what they our six-person panel's aggregate projections. All right, so here you go, Dan. They have the Yankees as the only team winning 100 games. You have the Dodgers at 99. Their division winners are the Yankees, the Twins, and the Astros. Wild card teams would be the Rays and the A's. So I don't think that's any different from last year, is it?
No, doesn't sound any different at all.
And then in the National League, they have Atlanta, St. Louis, and Los Angeles. Washington would get one wild card, but then they have three teams tied for the second wild card spot. They have Cincinnati, Arizona, and the New York Mets. Oh, no, they have four teams. The Mets and the Phillies all at 85 and 77. So we may have double game 163 and then a game 164 just to get the second National League wild card, Dan.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
And again, a lot like last year, everybody's down on the Cubs. While they don't have them finishing under 500 like Pakoda had last year, they have them at 82-80. And in fourth place, just where Schaumburg Stu thinks they're going to finish, they have it. Cardinals, Reds, Brewers, Cubs, Pirates. So that, you know, that kind of how it works out. And then they do have the Tigers as the worst team in baseball at 54-108.
Well, I mean, that would be an improvement from last year.
So what I really find interesting here, Dan, is the Reds making a really big jump in the standings in what is still considered, you know, a pretty tough, you know, NL Central. I know, you know, the top three teams didn't make any major moves. I know there's still a chance, but, you know, still a kind of a tough division. While in the American League Central, they don't have the White Sox making that big a move, even though they had a fantastic offseason, and neither of the teams was one of them. I mean, I know the Twins signed Donaldson, but, you know, the Indians didn't do anything, and, I mean, they're looking to subtract more than anything. So what – do you think it's just the fact that the Reds' moves are fresh that – you know, that it lit up in their minds and they thought to move them up the rankings where the White Sox made a lot of their moves early and they're kind of forgotten about them?
Yeah, you know, that could definitely play into it.
You know, because you can't tell me what the Reds did is any better than what the White Sox did. You know, and the Sox are in a weaker division.
I wouldn't even say weaker. I would say the weakest.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got to, you know, I didn't, we'd have to definitely look more into the splits and all that, but with the Tigers only winning 47 of their games, you know, you've got five teams in that league times 18. You know, the Twins definitely benefited the White Sox. But, you know, you're still looking at the Royals and then the Indians, you know, for, I mean, it just, it's, I don't even know how to describe it. A team that's trying to get rid of everybody, yet they finished with 93 wins.
Yeah.
Were they in the wild card? Let me go back real quick. They were 3 games out from the wild card. So a team that was looking to sell and not really looking to improve, get better, try to make a run like they did in the 2016 World Series, still managed to make third, you know, was in second place in their league, their division, and, you know, just fall short of wild card. So you can't tell me what the Whitecaps did this offseason isn't going to be an improvement and move them up.
Yeah, and the Indians are still looking to sell. And they're still predicted to finish the division. So, just kind of, kind of interesting. And, I mean, obviously, I know they need to get these things out there to start kind of doing this thing, but it's still way too early. And to be fair, Dan, I think if the Dodgers weren't in the American League West, or in the National League West, we'd probably be talking about that as the weakest division. Because besides, if you were to take the Dodgers out of that division, it would be horrible.
Oh, yeah.
So. But,
well,
yeah, I just thought it was.
Make some noise.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're, you know, not nothing, you know, they're not that great. So. Yeah, I think it would be probably comparable to the AL Central, maybe a little worse, just because Detroit is really bad. So. Yeah, sorry, Tigers fans, you're really bad. But, yeah, I just thought it was interesting, you know, to kind of see how, you know, how they played it out.
It's got to suck to be a Detroit fan.
Yeah, right now it does. So, now, are you surprised that they have the Astros in first place with all that's going on? Do you, you know, they did hire their GM today. They hired James Glick, or Click, I think it was. He was in the Tampa Bay front office. But, I mean, do you think it affects them and it maybe costs them games?
Big Jack, that's why they moved, they stayed in that position. Because they've got a guy who's got the
Tampa
team. Yeah, that always seems to find themselves in the mix into the, you know, the last couple of days of regular season and into the wild card. I mean, how many years is that? Have we been doing this since 2013? I don't remember how long it's been, but I feel like every year, at the end of the season, Madden or not, they're kind of getting in. And I believe when it came to the 163 game, they were probably, I think, the first team that kind of initiated it with that series kind of going. I think it was against the Yankees. I don't remember what year it was, but, you know, that's before Joe Madden's name was household. So, you know, that's what keeps them up there. But, no, I think you're underplaying some of the, you know, especially Oakland. But I can still imagine that the other teams in the West really haven't done anything fully to get them past that hump. But, I mean, anything's kind of possible. And if you don't know what's coming, you know, out of the pitcher's hand, it's going to be a little bit harder to rock them out of the park and drive in those runs. You know, with two great players on that team have been alluded to that, and one major signing that just baffled me has progressively come down back to earth since that World Series win. So it's always going to be in the back of your head. But, you know, I still think we're both on agreement that the Angels aren't ready to really make a playoff run. Who knows? But to kind of discount them and put Houston back at the top, just, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of their safe bet as opposed to maybe making some real analyzations and predictions.
Yeah. you know. But I know a couple names that people will recognize got deals today with invite, minor league deals with invites to spring training. The Braves signed Yonder Alonso to that deal. And then, interestingly, the Rangers signed Greg Bird to that type of deal. Yeah, you know, Bird was, just one of those guys that it just didn't work out for. You know, he was going to be the next great Yankee first baseman after he kind of had that breakout in 2015 when he got called up. And, man, he was going to be the guy. He just couldn't stay healthy. You know, we'll see if, you know, maybe a change of scenery helps him out and he can get a healthy year and some at-bats as a boost at Texas. Because I don't think they're going to displace Ronald Guzman to the Bird play every day. So. And then the Giants finally made a signing, Dan. They signed Wilmer Flores. So it doesn't say how many years, but it does say multi-year. So they added a utility guy.
That's the kid that was with the Mets, right?
Yeah. Last year he was with the Diamondbacks, but before that he had spent the past 6 years with the Mets. But yeah, he hit pretty well for the Diamondbacks as a part-timer. I mean, he hit 17. Only played 89 games, so he's a solid guy to have around as a backup. So I'm a little surprised the Giants made the move, but I don't know if it's really something they needed. I kind of thought maybe I would be seeing them announce they signed Yasiel Puig, but I guess at least they made some kind of move. So, you know, but yeah, like, you know, like I said, just, you know, a few names that, you know, fans will recognize, not any, you know, anything huge, but I did catch Dan, and I was interested on this one. I saw, you know, the MLB Network is doing their top 10 right now series. And I found it interesting that, I believe Javi Baez finished third or fourth on the list. And there were guys who actually kind of downgraded him because they said he played second base as well. Didn't he play well over 100-plus games at short last year?
Okay, this is the one ass-backwards thing I do not get about Major League Baseball analysts. These are the same guys that will come out and tell you how great Ben Zobrist is because he can play any position. Which, yes, he can, but when you push him to the outfield, he doesn't play at a high caliber level, as you would expect for any outfielder. So this is one of those things that I don't understand about some of these guys in baseball. A guy will play great if he plays multiple positions, but then when you're trying to rank him in your top 10 or, you know, top whatever, he's discounted because he played another position. So, I don't know if you've seen that Super Bowl commercial, but I think the best one was when the guy came walking up with basically his head up his ass. This is one of those things.
Oh, yeah. I could understand this if you would have, if you would have said this 2 years ago, you know, because you look at his fielding chart from 2018 and, he played, he started 75 games at second, 52 at short, and 18 at third. Last year, he started 128 games at shortstop, didn't even play second base last year, Dan. He made one start at third. But yet somebody brought up that he was a second baseman. Yeah, what?
Oh, yeah, he was.
These guys,
two seasons ago,
work on a baseball network, Dan. How did he not know he didn't play second base at all last year?
I mean, these are the things, Vic Jack. I need you to just, when this happens, just call me. Just call my phone and leave a message. This jackleg said this, and I will look it up. I will get those details so you don't have to do anything. And then so we could start, you know, the Big Jack segment. I don't know if we would do it daily or weekly, but jackleg of the day.
So, yeah, because I didn't even realize that. And I don't want to blame anybody because I don't remember who it was. But, yeah, it was just weird. And, by the way, the best Super Bowl commercial was Tom Brady trolling everybody. That was fantastic. You know, he put that picture up on his Instagram a couple weeks ago, and it ended up being for the Hulu commercial he did. So, by far, I love the fact that Tom Brady trolled everybody. So, that was hilarious. But, yeah, you know, so, yeah, they're doing their top 10 segment, which is just basically, you know, Brian Kenny's top 10. But, you know, they call it the Shredder just to make it seem like it's not Brian Kenny. So, but, yeah, I kind of thought that was interesting. And now, do you have him, you know, like I was kind of thinking he would be second. You know, I maybe we won't even get Dan back because we've only got about 3 minutes to go here. But, you know, I kind of had him second behind Francisco Lindor. But everybody else seemed to like Trevor Story better than him. And then, you know, a couple of guys had Xander Bogaerts ahead of him. So I was all behind Lindor. I had no problem with that. You know, that was no big deal. I think Lindor is probably the best shortstop in baseball. But, you know, Javi's a really close number two, I thought. You know, I find him as a better defender than Story, and I think he's a better hitter than Bogaerts. So I just don't know. You know, and again, when you're doing your rankings, it's subjective to what you think is valid or important. You know, maybe it's the fact that I see Baez more than I see these other guys. You know, but like I was pretty impressed that one guy actually went out and managed to put Tim Anderson in the top 10. He had him at 10. He was the only guy out of all their rankings I saw that actually had Anderson in. So obviously in this guy's idea, winning a batting title actually means something. You know, having a good batting average means something, where in today's, you know, sabermetric analytic type world, batting average isn't supposed to mean anything. So it just, you know, it was kind of nice to see that, because I'm still kind of a believer of, you know, having a guy who can hit for a good average, I think is important. But, you know, again, that's just one of those odd things that I fall into. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, you know, maybe it was just me and, you know, that's kind of how it, you know, how it worked out. But we are, you know, we are winding down here. And like I said, it's, oh, no, wait, we're going to get Dan back in for like the last 20 seconds of the podcast. What, you call back in for the last 30 seconds?
Yeah, my phone died.
So, well, real quickly, tell me where you would have Baez. I was saying I would have him probably two.
Yeah, I'm just going to agree with you. I think his value has shot up tremendously over the years. And, you know, despite the fact he only plays a shortstop now, because they gave up on their other guy.
Yeah. Well, but that was the object, though. You know, it was top 10 shortstops, and he is a shortstop. So, you know, that was the big question there. So, you know, yeah, how it goes. But, all right, look at that. We got Dan back just in time for us to go. So, there we go. I'm going to do it.
and it is on the list. And hey, we have 383 to go tomorrow.
Roll out.